Contrary to popular wishes, we haven't all been lynched by angry KDE users. This is episode 16 of the Anti-KDE Podcast. As a reminder, I'm Graham Morrison.
I'm Graham Morrison.
I'm Graham Morrison.
And I'm Richard Stallman.
And in this episode of the podcast, we are going to talk about Sony dropping support for Linux while Nokia goes head first, the hot topic, we report back on our experiences with text mode only life, and our open ballot, is it right to be zealous about free software? Of course, we are publishing news, features, and more on tuxradar.com all the time, so bookmark it today. And if you want to subscribe and keep us off the streets, go to tinyurl.com/podcastlxf and get 13 shiny issues of Linux Format Magazine through your postbox a year.
All right then, news. The biggest story over the last couple of weeks is that Nokia has released a new Linux handset, the N900. What do we make of it all?
Shiny
gadget.
It looks very nice. It looks great.
Does it?
Yeah.
It's running Linux, the MIMO, Haribo distribution. It's got a slide-out keyboard, 256 megs of RAM, 600 megahertz CPU. So it's kind of in the same spec ballpark as the iPhone.
I do love the Slashdot story about it because it just says where Nokia is going wrong. Because it says something like, and it's got the hardware specification, 256 megs of RAM, mm-hmm. blah inch screen, blah CPU, blah, 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 blah etc. They realize it doesn't really matter what megapixel it's got anymore. What's the actual system going to do? And now it's running Qt, isn't it, I think?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
About time. I think Qt is going to prove to be the savior of Nokia. Well, that's their plan, at least.
But how can they make it attractive? I mean, looking at some of the stats, it's a lot thicker than the iPhone. It's a lot heavier than the iPhone. And that's what it's going up against, isn't it? It's a pocket computer.
Is it any cheaper than the iPhone?
I don't know.
No, it's actually slightly more expensive. Oh. Ever so slightly.
Pricing strategy fail.
Mm. Well, I can see what they're doing with this. It's a bigger device. It's a better device. It's actually a more capable device.
Yeah.
Fair enough. That makes a lot of sense. And if they can make this work, then miniaturize. Get it smaller. Take the keyboard out, whatever. Get it smaller and more cheap, basically.
Mm-hmm. I didn't see whether it got a multi-touch screen, because I don't think it has.
I'm not sure about that.
And that would be a bit of a fail, I think. That kind of...
Would you rather have no multi-touch or wonky HTC multi-touch ripoff?
I just don't want stylus touch. That's right. That's what single touch scans to me like.
What about slide-out keyboards? Who likes slide-out keyboards?
I used to love them.
And then?
Then I got an iPhone.
Do you miss it? Would you still like one?
No, I don't miss it. Maybe I'd like a slide-out keyboard if it had braces.
Ah, for programming on the move.
Otherwise, no, I don't really miss it at all.
No, I think I agree with Paul there. I used to love the idea of it, but I actually got around to using it. No.
I like the way the... I mean, there was a great article about the difference between the text correction on Android and on iPhone. Mm-hmm. And they've both put a lot of work into making the soft keyboards better. And it's things like the way as you type, the iPhone learns the words you use.
Yeah.
Without having to say, add to dictionary. Of course, add to dictionary. I've just typed it for a reason.
You know? Yeah, I use this word.
Yeah, so it learns as you go, which is quite nice. And that kind of thing this makes a soft keyboard much, much nicer.
Not that the iPhone's perfect. I find it deeply frustrating sometimes when it tries to correct your characters and then recorrect your characters and then insert all kinds of errors in what you're trying
but
to
you can turn correction off. I've turned it off.
You can turn it off, but by and large, it's useful. It's just frustrating sometimes.
So I'm surprised Nokia's taking a step backwards here. I guess they're stuck with the hardware they've already purchased, perhaps, or who knows. Or maybe they haven't got a decent Linux soft keyboard implementation yet that rivals Apple's.
Perhaps so, yeah. You think it's something they could work on.
But surely they get everything Google does now on their Android stuff. They can just nick bits of that and drop it into their stuff. Which is just too vastly different, perhaps. Java to Qt, MIMO.
Possibly so, yeah.
Is it going to be open? Will anybody be able to download the SDK and create their own binaries to run on the phone?
Well, if it's MIMO, then I presume so, yeah. Well,
that's nice.
I guess they'll lock off the bits like the phone radio stuff.
Bass, band. Yeah.
But the rest would be nice.
Second news item, Google Chrome has now gone 64-bit.
Wow.
How revolutionary is that?
That's great, yeah. I don't have a 64-bit machine.
Do you not?
No.
You're Philistine.
Oh, man.
I've only got a 63-bit machine, so...
It's 64-bit on Linux first, which I think is cool. Mm. I think it shows some sort of actual commitment to make cross-platform, cross-architecture, the kind of things Linux users really want, work anywhere, out of the box. And that's great.
I'd rather they get Flash working first.
Is that still in beta, is it?
I can't get it to work. There are hacks using libflash or whatever it is from Mozilla, but
I think doesn't Grease Monkey also work? So they are taking bits, bits of business from Mozilla, aren't they?
Yeah.
The bits they like.
So has anybody here actually moved to Chrome full time or is thinking about switching to Chrome full time?
Well, I do keep it open on my desktop all the time, just for Gmail, really. Gmail and Google Docs.
That's exactly what you said last time. That's amazing.
It is, isn't it?
Well, I do keep it open on my desktop for Gmail and Google Docs. Because it's just so much faster.
Well, with the Ajaxy type of stuff.
Yeah.
And the JavaScript. And imagine so.
And to be fair, if actually it doesn't support Flash, I'd probably switch to it too.
It's good enough reason as any. Up your productivity. No more YouTube.
Might get some work done.
Might get some work done.
So what kind of effect does doubling the bits from 32 to 64 have on JavaScript performance?
That's a very good question. I expect it's faster.
Is it twice as fast, though, or is it
No, it's not going to be twice as fast.
It's not like Sonic 2, no.
There's a bit more CPU cache wasted because not every bit of data is 64 bits. You're wasting some space. There are more registers, and you can address more RAM. And
bigger numbers.
That's about it.
You can use bigger numbers.
Thanks, Paul. That's a great answer.
Yeah, it's a great answer, yeah. Well, also, I presume it means it can take advantage of all the SSE 4 stuff, I guess, 4.1, the latest CPUs. Anyway, it's slightly faster, and that's good. Always good.
Cool. And finally, Sony has announced the PS3 Slim, which will not support Linux.
Ooh.
Is this a massive, crippling blow for the Linux desktop?
I think it's sad. I don't know if it's irony, but just last week or the week before, the people who make Yellow Dog Linux, I actually got one in for review, announced a Yellow Dog Linux on a USB stick that will boot off a PS3. It's quite a nice idea. I mean,
but not this PS3.
But not this PS3, no. For the first time, people will be able to avoid having to repartition their drive on a PS3 and get Linux running.
So is this Yellow Dog again getting bitten?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
They were doing quite well with Apple for a while. Apple dropped PowerPC and switched to Intel. Exactly. We've got PS3 now. Oh.
But what changes have Sony made to stop Linux support? I mean, if all the chips are still there, and unless they've changed some sort of... removed booting.
You think if you can still play Killzone 2 on a PS3 sim, it could manage Linux.
But, yeah.
You know, apparently not.
The official reason is that they don't want to rewrite the hypervisor, the driver stuff.
Okay.
For the new hardware. Which, as you say, if the hardware hasn't changed, which it hasn't, I presume it's been die-shrunk.
Yeah.
They
can't do too much to it, can they? Otherwise,
correct, So it hasn't really changed, so we're all rather surprised. I think it's just laziness, one less thing to support, perhaps.
So it's just official support, then?
Allegedly.
No, people can still hack it.
No.
Maybe
hack it.
I don't know if the PS3 is hackable. Really, I don't. But previously, you could go through one of the menus and choose install other OS and install Linux that way. So that's gone.
I've got a PS3 and I was never ever planning to use that feature. I'm not really missing it. Maybe it'll annoy some researchers perhaps who do want to be able to use it, but they didn't even get all the SPUs, did they, on the CPU? Well,
and the big advantage is that the market will now be flooded with 60 gig PS3s. And so that they can pick up their network for cheap. Yeah. They can still run Linux.
Maybe that's their plan, to try and free up the market, to give some space.
I mean, I do actually have Linux on my PS3, but yeah, I barely ever use it, unfortunately.
And when you use it, do you use it in text mode only? Or
It might as well be in text mode only, because it's hard to get the mouse and keyboard working.
Right, it's now time for the hot topic. Those of you still awake may remember that last podcast we reported back on the results of our KDE challenge, during which we only used KDE for work.
The horror. And,
it wasn't. I didn't find it horrible. But anyway, that was...
You used 3.5!
But anyway, that's all in the past. We've moved on. We've taken one step up the evolutionary ladder.
There, you see? Yeah.
It's all about freedom.
And we've freed ourselves from the GUI and spent 2 weeks working purely in text mode.
If only we did.
Mostly.
I have to say, my experiences of text mode were superb. I find it no barrier to productivity because I don't actually do much work on my Linux machine. But Graham,
the thing is, I could definitely get used to it. It reminds me of when you first got a Commodore 64, you know, and you learn absolutely everything about it and you do everything you possibly can and you become incredibly productive with it. I could have done that. if there weren't deadlines and other things that got in the way. If I had enough time to become proficient with the command line, I'd have been just as fast or faster than I am on the desktop. But as it was, I'm too used to visual spell checking in OpenOffice.org and using the GIMP to take my screenshots. Now, you know, I can use Image Magic and I can install spell checking on Vim or Emacs, but it's getting the configuration to that optimum level that takes the time, and I didn't quite have the time.
Surely, though, if you were working in text mode, you wouldn't have to take screenshots.
Well, I've still got to review the software, or, you know, you could take screenshots from the command line, so I could run the software on a desktop and another screen and then take screenshots.
And then quickly press Alt F7.
This was probably the idea, back. Yeah. But I didn't.
So let's think about some of the software that we were using. I used Lynx for web browsing, which actually works with Google Mail, the simple HTML version.
It was really nice too.
It's really, really fast. The first thing we did was change the grub settings so that we got a much better screen resolution for text mode. So Lynx worked well. And then we tried CenterIM for Google Chat, which caused some problems by erasing names associated with contacts in Google Talk.
Just to clarify, CenterIM writers, I will find you, and I will do bad things to you, because it fiddled with all my Gmail contacts. It removes
all, even your wife.
It removed all their names. It's now just called Okachi. Oops, that's Mike's personal email address.
Doesn't matter.
rather than like Mike, which is very annoying. And then, worst of all, it seemed to invite random people from my contacts list to go on Gmail chat. People I don't really know because they've emailed me once or twice before. Now I've been saying, "Hi Paul, what do you want?" What? Why? I'm searching my Gmail to find out who they are and just ignore them quickly because I don't like them very much. It's strange and it's not very nice. Why does it do that? Or worse, why does Gmail let it do that?
Yeah, there's two sides to it, aren't there? I mean, I actually really liked that.
It looked that fantastic.
It's functionality. It's amazing.
You know, had multiple panes and it basically recreated a GUI. Instant messenger.
I used a client called FreeTalk.
FreeTalk.
Which was, it's just a Jabber client and you just type in your Gmail address. It doesn't even ask you to type in the tdistalk.google.com and change the ports and use it. It worked perfectly. It was brilliant. And unlike CenterIM, you just got a command line and you typed in your email address and then your message and it sent you the message. And if you're in a conversation, it simply prefixed each line with your email address. You could delete that, press tab, and try to autocomplete whatever names were online. And you could also type bash commands straight from there. So
really?
It's kind of like an enhanced bash with JabberIM capabilities.
So you could go about doing your work then, and then still be in this conversation.
Well, yeah, you'd need to... It took over the whole terminal, so you need to use screen or a different terminal for the work side. But, yeah, that was nice. Very, very refreshing to use something like that as opposed to Copete.
I actually carried on using CenterIM, and I have to admit, the guys who wrote it, it's very, very functional. It's everything I want in a smart way. I had a few problems, though, because I'm a big screen user, and the new Ubuntu has a new screen profile stuff, and it's just very cool. First thing I did was set up, you know, three or four tabs of the screen thing, and named them all, so this would be like, you know, Gmail, and this would be... So you can see them all really nicely. That was great. But in CenterIM, I think it was F9 for some sort of settings or something. And F9 was also mapped to screen settings. Pressing F9 would bring up a screen window saying, hey, do you want to change your profile or change your theme or, you know, cool, very cool stuff. But in limited time frame, I actually had to fiddle with this stuff. I couldn't figure out how to make screen not use F9 and pass the F9 key to CenterIM. So perhaps I'm just being stupid. Maybe one of the commenters could figure that problem out for me.
Dot screen RC or something.
Maybe I just want to say, hey, you know, maybe it's like Control Alt F9, but you know, it means bypass screen. Give the F9 to my program, please.
Yeah, yeah.
Must be a way of doing it somehow. That was annoying. Otherwise, I had a great experience. Gmail is so much faster in Lynx.
It's ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Yeah.
Even faster than it is in Chrome.
As a non-Chrome user, I don't know. Graham?
I didn't use Lynx. I used E-Link.
E-Links,
that's it. I had a similar experience, although I didn't have JavaScript installed. I could have gone
There is a JavaScript engine, isn't there?
But I didn't get around to doing that. So that held me back a little bit. But yeah, I loved it. It was great.
Lynx actually made the live cricket updates from the Oval much better, because rather than displaying an image, it shows you the alt text, which you know, lends an air of mystery and of intrigue. You know, you'd get the, you know, Australia, you know, 205 for one,
alt text picture of Lord Mandelson.
Enjoying the cricket.
That's great. How does it work?
Because he's staring intently at the ball. You know, like a game of Quidditch.
Chanting, mumbling under the breath.
The application I couldn't find a replacement for was a decent music player. I had to resort to A-Play.
And Harry.
Harry. Yes, Harry is.
Harry's great.
One I found about.
Oh, you should have told me about it, because that was the only
thing. Did you?
No, I didn't ask.
That was in Hot Picks a while ago.
Yeah, I put it in there.
Just a couple of issues.
Yeah, my expert hot pickery.
Ah.
So it's full-featured playlists, folders.
It's focused around party stuff, so you can reorder things on the right-hand pane quite easily. But yeah, it's fine. Yeah, that's all I want to do.
I remember getting an old Pentium 75 laptop to play music in text mode using MP3 Blaster. It was great because you could downsample the MP3s. So 75 megahertz, good. And it would play.
Yeah, you're right. I remember those days when you couldn't barely decode an MP3
exactly.
in real time.
Yeah. Well, I couldn't use it in any other software, but MP3 Blaster rules.
There is talk of a further challenge. But I think we should delay it for 2 weeks because Graham's going on holiday for 2 weeks, so it's not really fair.
It is fair.
No.
We all have to suffer.
What is this challenge?
We haven't mentioned it yet, have we?
We only have to speak in French for the next 2 weeks.
Great.
Buff.
Graham could walk that. That'd be brilliant.
Get together a Vicom sandwich.
No, we're thinking of... This sounds terrible. We're thinking of switching to Microsoft Services Online for 2 weeks.
Oh, no.
Which means dropping Google and using Bing.
Hotmail.
And then using Hotmail. It sounds awful. I'm not sure we can do it.
I've been banned from using my Hotmail account.
What were you doing with it?
I wasn't...
Oh, yeah, Graham.
I honestly wasn't doing anything with it. And I've been locked out of it for months, and then I got into it a couple of weeks ago, and there was a note saying, this account has been suspended for use that goes against our terms and conditions.
Wow.
Did it say what?
No.
Maybe it wasn't using it, perhaps.
Maybe it wasn't clicking on the adverts.
You have to use it like once every 2 or 3 months.
It's like the trial.
Yes, they're out.
So anyway,
this
week, last week, some of these days, Microsoft came in to Tux Radar HQ to espouse how awesome Bing is. And it does look very, very fully featured. It looks very nice. But for some reason, we all use Google. Basically, we all use Google. And it is potentially possible that in some respects, Bing is better than Google. But until we try it, until we force ourselves to try it, we're never going to know. So
I think this is true. It's like good. Bing Maps as well has this bird's eye view, which is not like the satellite view on Google Maps, which is already really good. But this is at an angle. It seems to be at a not quite a 45-degree angle, but it's brilliant. You get a really good view of the side of building.
Does it use Silverlight, or is that just...
No, it's just pictures from Google Maps.
Oh, right.
It has satellite view as well, so you can do angle or flat on.
Yeah.
Is it like the weather map that they use on the BBC weather report, where Scotland is about the same size as Devon?
It's really good, and it's one of those things I thought, well, I haven't... You know, you just think, well, it's Microsoft, so I'm not going to use it, but there is a case that perhaps they're doing something good.
So... Should we try it 2 weeks?
Or wait for
Graham to get back?
Graham, surely you don't want to miss out on that.
On the action.
It sounds relatively easy. Yeah, okay. Should we wait? We'll wait. But then, what are we going to do for the next one?
After that?
No, for the next
one. What happened to French?
All right. Okay.
Does that mean the magazine has to be in French?
Maintenant!
All Tux Radar articles.
Hello,
and the next podcast in French.
Okay. Can we rename it from Bing? I hate the name Bing.
Le Bing?
Apparently, Bing is the sound of found.
Oh. What? The sound of found. I found it. Wow.
That's what they told me with a straight face. I wasn't going to complain.
Oh. Does it actually go Bing when you get your search results up? I don't think I've done it with
the
volume.
I haven't used it yet. I'll tell you in 2 weeks or 4 weeks even when Graham gets back.
That's the problem with Microsoft, isn't it? They just...
And with that, Microsoft battery, we come to the halfway of our podcast. Still to come, the discovery of the week and our open ballot. Should we be zealous for free software?
Okay, it's discovery of the fortnight. And who shall we start with? It was me last... Oh, it's Mike. Mike.
Great.
What have you discovered, Mike?
My discovery has been, as many people have already seen, Slackware 13.0 has been released. And in typical Slackware fashion, it's quite conservative. There's only KDE 4.2 and not 4.3. But it's got plenty of new features. There's the new X server, so you don't necessarily need a config file for X to work. This is the first release to have official x86-64 support. And there's a new TXZ package format with better compression. So for those old school Slackers amongst us, it looks like a pretty good release. I will be playing around with it over the next couple of weeks.
Well, I was thinking of switching, but it hasn't got KDE 4.3.
Well, you could build it from source. It might make it really, really good.
So what's the new package thing all about?
Well, it used to be TGZ packages.
Right.
Slackware packages, they're quite simple. They are basically tarballs with a little bit of meta information inside. They're not, you know, super complicated like
that. Well, like a readme.txt.
No, there are like pre-install, post-install scripts and things like that, but they've moved to just a different system for compression.
Oh, just for the compression.
For the compression, right. Yeah. So it makes them smaller, can cram more onto the CDs, which is great.
Excellent. Okay, Paul?
I've got an undiscovery again. Mike spotted that the Open Font Library website has now appeared to be some sort of spam/parked domain now.
Yeah.
I think there's some sort of Hudzilla curse kicking in here. Things are starting to go wrong when I mentioned
it. Since you discovered it?
Yes. Yeah. So, damn with Viola, damn with the Open Font Library. It's all going wrong. It may be just temporary, just parked or something, but it is just showing up adverts for fonts and stuff, which is lame. But my actual discovery is that man pages are useless.
Really?
Having used the command line solidly for 2 weeks, apart from very briefly to post something on Twitter, I was using BC, right? The calculator, the command line calculator thing. And I use it all the time as a command line calculator. You can just type echo your equation, you know, quote, 57 times 39, quote, pipe BC, and it'll give you the response as the result. And after a little bit of time, I was getting more adventurous. You know, I wanted to run things such as sines and cosines. So I looked in the man page, and it took a bit of digging, but I found it at the end on line 500 or something. I had to use the S function and pass dash L to BC to make it work. Not hard, but not really easy either. Other man pages, PS particularly, is one of the worst examples, are frankly terrifying. GCC makes sense, fair enough, it's a hard app aimed at hardcore users, so it makes sense to be hard, but PS, surely PS, should be fairly common. Everyone wants to know what apps are running right now. So I think, as a result, we need some sort of easier man pages that actually teach things, focusing on what they need to know first, giving lots of examples, ignoring useless options, that'd be great.
Yeah, so some man pages have a problem that they don't give any examples whatsoever. I think something like Make ISO FS or some one application in the past, you know, had a billion options, but it didn't have the examples at the bottom to say, you know, I just want to rip a DVD or Mencoder or something.
It looks like we're trying to burn a CD.
Yeah.
That's what most of us only look in the man pages for.
Exactly.
And they come right in the very end, as you say.
I think they should split them up. There should be simple man and hard man. Although, you know, perhaps there's GNU info as well thrown into all this, which nobody uses.
Yeah, but isn't info just man with more key press options?
It's like a text mode adventure game for a manual.
Cool. Well, I'll give Andrew a little bit more time to think about his. Mine is another command line related discovery. It's only small, and maybe you all know this, but I didn't know. Mkdir to make a directory with the hyphen P option.
Yeah, come on.
Creates nested directories.
Oh,
I didn't know that.
Might be useful to some people.
You just type mkdir cd.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
That's the truth. Now I can organise my music collection just like I can on the desktop. Andrew, should we come back to you at the end of the show?
There's no point really, is there? I've discovered that a man in decent shape, as in not enormously fat, if you can get your head through a gap, then you can climb your whole body through it.
Really?
That's apparently fact.
Where did you get trapped somewhere or something? on your travels?
I did actually, Mike. I got trapped in a cupboard and had to climb out of a gap that was about that big.
That big?
Big, yeah. That's about hand span. But I had to take my trousers off because my belt kept getting stuck.
Can you please a bit of backstory to how you got trapped in this cupboard?
No, I think I'll just leave it there as a mystery.
Were you able to reach through and pick up your trousers?
I was, like Indiana Jones.
Excellent, excellent.
Yeah, it was really cool.
And the whip.
And no, I left that there. Whoever finds that is in for a treat.
And did you get the diamonds?
I've got the Shankara stones.
And now it's time for our open ballot. The question this fortnight, is it right to be zealous about free software? As in, if we really care, free as in freedom, free as in price, free as in beer, free as in goodness knows what, does it really matter? If so, should we go out and preach the word to the people? What do you think? Graham?
No, I don't think we should. No, I think we should. It's annoying when people preach to you. Everybody feels the same way, I'm sure. It's great to get the information out there and try and help get the information out there. Maybe we need a better marketing campaign for Linux and open source and free software, but I really don't want to get in people's face and tell them what I think they should be doing.
That's a really good idea, Graham. You should write that down.
but surely there are already fanboys out there for all the other OSs.
Yeah, and I find it deeply unpleasant. You know, it actually just annoys me. I mean, you look at any PlayStation forum or Xbox 360 forum, anybody says anything that disparages the other side, and you just... Or Windows 7 versus Linux. It just becomes...
Which you wrote.
I think it's good to be positive, and I think it's good when asked to respond. You know, when people say, why do you use Linux? Give them the reasons that we'd like.
So personal examples, basically.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, but wait until you're specifically asked. I recall last year, the Free Software Foundation organized this campaign, or at least they tried to, whereby people would go into Apple retail stores and they would book up slots with the so-called geniuses in Apple retail stores and ask them questions about Apple's privacy, like a denial of service attack on the Apple stores, blocking them off in order to make a point. And I think so bad. That is fundamentally very, very stupid, because the people in Apple stores queuing up to buy a replacement battery or, you know, a mouse or something are not going to suddenly be swayed to the world of GNU because of a bunch of guys arguing up ahead.
From my personal experience, people with that kind of attitude put me off. And maybe I'm stubborn, but I'm more tempted then to go and do exactly the opposite of what they're saying. And that's what I'm afraid of. I think it's counterproductive.
If they really wanted to make a stance, they should have got some MacBooks and put Linux or Herd on. Gone in there and say, hey, look, this is really cool.
What have they got to be afraid of?
Yeah.
You know, by showing that Linux is genuinely better if that's what they believe.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, presumably their plan is if people can't even see OS X running. they're going to go in the shop and they're going to stand in front of all the MacBooks and not move.
That, a lot of the Free Software Foundation tactics remind me of the superb cartoon first published in Punch at the time of the suffragette campaigns called The Shrieking Sister, featuring a woman holding a placard screaming her head off outside some town hall meeting, and another woman walks past, and the caption is, you think you help our cause, why you're its worst enemy. And I hope I've remembered that better than the Benjamin Disraeli and Gladstone thing that I got wrong last fortnight. But hopefully we'll be able to put some sort of web link up to the source. Because you really could just, you know, gimp out this woman's face and put Beardy Stormman on there. And it would make just as much sense now as it did in, you know, 1893 or whenever.
On the one hand, I do respect Stallman for standing by his goals, from never being diluted, never just giving up and saying, oh, well, it's not worth it. But some of the tactics, like you say, the flame wars that you see between people, you know, arguing about Windows versus Linux, and the amount of zealotry on both sides is horrifying. Well, most of it's probably trolling, in which case it's for the lulz, but...
Honestly, Mike, have you ever thought, be honest here, ever thought, I wish Richard Stallman would just shut up?
When he's singing the Free Software song, maybe, yes.
That song's on YouTube many, many times. He seems to feel no shame.
Yeah, well, he repeats the same points again and again and again, which sounds like can sound like a stuck record. I mean, the guy has done a lot, but you know, in terms of marketing free software and freedom, I don't think it's been that effective.
It reminds me of when I was a student. There was a big banner in the Students' Union about I think it was about homophobia, and it said, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. And I really hated that banner because I wasn't part of the solution, and I immediately became, you know, complicit. No, and that turned me off the whole campaign.
If you're not with us, you're against us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're helping the terrorists to win.
Another quote I'm going to get wrong.
Is it a biblical quote?
No. It's from Danton's Death by Georg Büchner.
I was close.
which I think came out in about either 1848 or 1830, something like.
He who
holds my sword when I go to defend myself kills me just as surely as if they had struck the blow. Sorry, I'm just showing.
So while Graham surfs YouTube all day,
Andrew's on Wikipedia. But has Stormman zealotry helped the free software campaign? Because I don't think it probably has.
I think it may have helped by not Stormman himself directly. And if we had an army of Stormans, it might be quite bad. But Stormman has his concrete set views. And then if some of those are spread into other people and are more diluted in spreading free software, then I think that really works. So I wouldn't want to just get rid of Stormman just to retire at the moment. He's not maybe a very effective figure.
At the moment, he's like an eccentric uncle.
Well, yes, you know, he's like a super condensed form of what we really want.
But aren't you embarrassed about that uncle when your mates come around?
Yeah. That's kind of what I mean.
Well, at least, I mean, it sounds terrible, at least he's better than ESR.
Oh, this is true.
And at RMS, I've got a lot of respect for the man. He's done some awesome things in the past. And he still says awesome things. You know, his JavaScript piece was great, and respect to the man for that. I just don't necessarily agree with some of the things other folks are doing about free software, as in the Apple Genius thing is obviously terrible and embarrassing, actually, and probably hurting ourselves. You know, we don't tend to say much fanboyish stuff on Tux Radar. We do, obviously, that Linux versus Windows 7 piece was a little bit biased, but we are a Linux site, so quite frankly... Well, the people are saying, saying, you know, I came here expecting to read a wonderful, unbiased piece, and haven't you seen the URL, folks? You know, it's Tux Radar. We're all Linux users. Of course we're going to say Linux wins, because we wouldn't be a Linux site otherwise. Oh, well. We don't do very much biased stuff. I don't think we're zealous. We're not zealous, are we, really?
No, I don't think so.
Perhaps we ought to be.
Lol, you install Te Linux now. It's Te better than your crappy OS.
No, but it's about freedom, isn't it? And it's about respecting other people's freedom to make their own decisions.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. And with such firm conclusion, we come to the end of our podcast. Once again, all the notes for this podcast are on the website.
Are you playing?
What's that? Who did that?
That's a copyrighted sound, isn't it?
Is it? Who owns that? What, Sega or somebody?
Lord Mendelssohn.
You're not respecting Nintendo's freedom.
I'm not, no. I will go out and buy a Nintendo game just to refund them for that. Right, I've got a little quiz as the one more thing. Remember, we were talking ages ago about the distros we started using when we first started using Linux.
Montevideo.
Is almost correct. It was actually Buenos Aires. But... how many Red Hat Linux release code names can you remember?
Red Hat.
Zod.
Not quite.
Damn.
What? Not Zod. Zod.
General Zod, no.
No, Zod. You're
Zod.
Yeah.
You're very close. It's not Zod.
Damn.
It was Zoot.
No, it wasn't.
Zoot.
It was. 6.2.
No, later than that. Like 9 or something. 8.
9 was Shrike.
That's a Monty Python thing, isn't it?
What, Neil before Zod?
Neil before Zod. That's from Superman. Superman.
One of them. I'm sure one of them was called Zod. Anyway,
nope, it's not in my list.
Leonidas.
Which release?
That's 11.
Oh, that's Fedora. I'm talking Red Hat here.
Oh, okay. Oh, right. Fail.
No idea.
Any?
Okay. Let's have so, is there a general theme? Monty Python.
Nope.
Well, we should remember the 7.3 one, shouldn't we?
Yeah, 7.3.
That was key, wasn't it?
Rawhide.
Nope, that was the development branch.
Where's my iPhone?
Do you remember when you installed Red Hat 5.1?
Jaunty.
I do remember, yeah, but I don't remember the name for it.
Red Hat 2009 Free 1 Spring Edition.
Turbo Championship Edition. I'll just run through some of the recent ones quickly then. 5.0 Hurricane, 5.1 Manhattan, 5.2 Apollo, 6.0 Hedwig, 6.1 Cartman, 6.2 Zoot, 7.0 Guinness, 7.1 Seawolf, 7.2 Enigma, 7.3 Valhalla, 8... Remember Valhalla? 8 Psyche and 9 Shrike.
They're impressively random.
They are. Yeah, I don't think there's any thread going between them.
And were they allowed to use Guinness?
Well, surely there's mysticism, isn't there? You've got Psyche, Shrike and Valhalla at the very least.
And Cartman.
Yes, thanks for that, Mike.
Well, once again, that's put us in our place.
Proving our absolute incompetence with Linux history. And if you can do better than that, post some comments on the podcast, honestly telling us how many of them you knew. Don't forget, you can tune in 2 weeks' time for more random trivia taken from Wikipedia, and we'll see you then. Remember, I'm Graham Morrison.
Bye.
Don't lie. It's such a nice day to be on the main stage.